Connect with others in the Awaken Therapist community and join us over on Patreon. When you become a member of the Awaken Therapist community, you'll gain access to exclusive teachings, consultations, and resources. Find out more at awakentherapist.com. I'm Harmony Quiker, licensed counselor, author, and visiting instructor at Naropa University, where I teach Gestalt therapy. I created this podcast to support therapists and clients in unlocking the magic of psychotherapy. In season two, I'm joined by expert therapists who bring a wealth of insight into the conversation of transpersonal counseling. Breathwork is such an essential practice for a transpersonal counselor because it teaches us how to open to our own organismic self-regulation and inherent movement towards health, as well as informing the way that we work with our client's somatic intelligence. I'm so excited to have my friend Erin Overstreet join me in this conversation about breathwork. Erin has been studying and teaching breathwork for over 3 decades, and he offers us a masterclass on breathwork practices to avoid burnout. Enjoy this episode. Yeah, how are you today?
I'm doing well. It's good to see you, Harmony. Thank you for having me here.
So good to see you always, Erin. Thank you so much for being here. As you know, I was raised by a breath worker, and in the 80s, the outgoing message on our machine ended with, "And as always, remember to breathe." With this big sigh. And of course, as a child, I was mortified, but breathwork has really become a sacred practice for me and a practice that I find essential to who I am as a transpersonal counselor. And I know that you were also raised by a breath worker, and I would love to hear how just a little bit about your journey of becoming a trainer and how you've integrated this into your life.
Great. Yeah, I think we're both second generation, but we have very different upbringings where, like you said, you were raised by a breath worker. I was abandoned by a breath worker. When my dad went to study breath work with Leonard Orr, he went to Hawaii and he didn't come back. It wasn't until my teenage years I reconnected with my dad, and then I was 20, and he said, "Hey, do you want to try this thing I know how to do?" I'd already been meditating and, working with altered states through psychedelics. And so I just said, "Sure." And I did this breathwork session with my dad. And right away, I was like, "This is it. This is what I want to do." This was down in California. And he said, "Well, there's a training center, 4 hours from here up in Sierraville, California," when Leonard owned Sierraville Hot Springs. And within 2 weeks, I was living there just fully immersed. It saved my life. It's interesting to me that a lot of my core material that I've had to work through was because my dad left, but then he left so I could have the tool to work through a lot of that and to heal it. It's just interesting how these things play out. It was all perfect. My dad continued to do breath work and do rebirthing until he passed a couple of years ago. I've been doing it for 35 years, and initially I was just focused on rebirthing because I saw that this is what's going to save me. This is what's going to help me process all my unresolved trauma, distress. And then over the years, I started to realize that there's a lot more to breath work than just that. That's one specific tool. As you know, rebirthing is very simple as far as the mechanism and the technique. Very complex in the healing and the things that can happen, and the way the breath works with us with that simple technique, where there might be other breathing exercises that are more complex, shorter, and they all have a purpose. And so I've especially lately been really looking at just gathering all the books I can about breath work, learning all the different exercises for a long list of different things. And so I'm still offering rebirthing sessions with people, but also branching into helping people design their own daily practice. Where are you at? What do you need? And there's usually a breathwork practice for that. And Yeah, I just love studying the breath and just having closeness with my own breath. And that's been a big theme for me lately is looking at closeness. Closeness being different than emotional intimacy, physical intimacy, attention. Closeness as something most of us probably didn't get enough of as children. And this sometimes can show up as a frozen need that, and create codependency. But I've been taking that theme of closeness and looking at in myself, how do I have closeness with my breath? And so really just taking time to pay attention and listen. And one of the descriptions I like about closeness is the other person is thinking well about me. So I like to bring that in with my breath, where I know my breath is thinking well about me, I'm thinking well about it. Just bringing that theme in has been a fun thing to play around with recently.
Yeah, that reminds me of something I've heard you say before, which is your body wants you to heal. Like in the experience of breath work, when we have these bigger sensations, there's a reason we're having those sensations. Our body's revealing to us what it needs.
I think that's so important to know that if our body is in pain, if we have disease or we have a physical thing going on, that it's not our body fighting us, it's our body fighting for us. It's trying to get our attention.
So important. It just in the shift of how we relate to the sensations can be just so transformative in and of itself. And I find that as a therapist also, where the new counselors that I train are often afraid of their clients' big emotions or big sensations. I think because of my practice with breath work and my, turning towards and making room for my experience to be exactly what it is, I have that capacity to be that way for my clients as well.
Yeah, once you've faced your big stuff and seen the gift in it and the aliveness in it, then yeah, you can hold that space for others. I mean, that's such a big part of being a professional helper or a therapist is you have to do the work too.
Absolutely. I really appreciate you sharing this story about your dad. I didn't know that. So thank you for sharing that. And as you did, I was actually remembering I was 5 the first time I did a breathwork session with my mom. And there's just something so different about breathing with one's caregiver versus breathing with somebody else who's holding space. And so it sounds like that was just a really important initiation into breathwork for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was also the first kind of like, oh, I can get high from my own supply moment of I was playing around with psychedelics and to get into these altered states and that like, oh, I can get there with my breath. This is it.
Yeah, will you share more about conscious connected breathing?
I was trained, we were both kind of grew up with rebirthing. It can also be called holotropic, connected breathing, circular breathing. Transformational breath work, breath wave is a recent one. There's lots of different names for it. And the reason it was called rebirthing was because even before the breath work element came in, Leonard was working with people to heal their birth trauma. And then he quickly discovered that the breath was the tool. And at the same time, Stanislaus Grof was working with LSD to heal birth trauma. And then once LSD became illegal, he picked up on what Leonard was doing, called it holotropic. And the reason that that name still works is because anytime you start working with your breath, you're usually going to get back to your birth trauma at some point. That unresolved first breath or stories that we created because of our birth or what happened after our birth. The breath we're talking about is a circular, connected breath where there's no pause. It's very simple in that it can change speed and depth. The other important thing is dropping the exhale, which is we're taking in life, we're moving forward, and we're letting go and surrendering. And in that drop of the exhale, that also tells our body, I'm letting go. And that letting go is I'm letting go into your love and intelligence. One aspect of the circular breath I always like to invite people to pay attention to is that spark of the inhale. That's our life urge. That's that part of our body that will always keep moving forward. We can't consciously stop ourselves from breathing for very long. we will either pass out and our body will breathe on its own, or that urge to breathe in will become so strong. And I see that as, that affirmation Leonard had of our life urge is always stronger than our death urge, that our body carries that. No matter where our mind and emotions are, our body will always take that next breath. We can color it, we can influence the quality of it, but we can't stop it. Our body will always keep going and keep trying. And so in that connected breathing, we tap into that and then the surrender. And that intelligence of the body in this mechanism is listening to us. So if we say, well, I want to resolve this childhood trauma, or I want to feel better, our body will often say, well, okay, here it is. You want to feel better? Look at this. And then there's the temporary feeling worse as we go through the emotions that were stored so that we could have survived our childhood. And even that is love. Our body stores things so we can survive because it has to keep us alive. And so really in all of it, I like to focus on we're all human and there's love. Our body loves us, even if it's giving us strong pain, if it's limiting us. It's easy to feel it when we're alive and happy and everything's going well. But even in those dark moments, to remember that our body loves us and it's all love. The communication, if it's shouting at us. So, yeah, rebirthing is a mechanism that's organic. Leonard didn't create it. He discovered that as people were processing their birth trauma, their bodies naturally went into this. I do want to speak to what we talked about before about Leonard was not doing anything that could hurt someone when he was triggering the birth trauma. I know in Colorado, rebirthing is illegal because some practitioners killed a little girl by trying to recreate the birth environment by covering her with pillows and she suffocated. Leonard was not doing anything like that. That was not rebirthing, but the press got a hold of it as rebirthing and ran with it. That has nothing to do with what Leonard was doing, but unfortunately, that got crossed with his work. So in his bringing people into birth trauma, it was just getting them into a hot tub with a snorkel, which became the womb and the umbilical cord. And people would often go back because that was the intention. And then the benefit was when their bodies started doing the natural circular breathing, which if you watch infants, you watch animals, they'll breathe that way. We're not meant to breathe that way all the time, but it's a way of breathing to process distress, anxiety, trauma. So Leonard created rebirthing by observing this. It's a natural organic mechanism in the body. There's a normal cycle to it, which is usually about 90 minutes. And then through this journey, this 90-minute journey, people will go through whatever the body wants them to go through. Sometimes it's deeply peaceful and blissful. Sometimes it takes you to the edge of the thing you have to face, and then that gets resolved. But the end result is always relaxed, peaceful, lighter. Something has been, not just felt, but actually processed and resolved.
I know you often refer to the circular breath as a self-cleaning mechanism of the breath. I love that so much because just even hearing that language, when I breathe now, I'm sort of like, oh, my breath is sort of scrubbing me from the inside, like emptying me out, cleaning out what needs to be processed, what emotions I hadn't fully moved through, or something that I've been holding on to.
Yeah, and in that self-cleaning process, our role as rebirther or practitioner is kind of breath technician and breath interpreter. It's a mechanism. So watching the mechanism, suggesting adjustments, and then holding space, but then also seeing things in the breath that are very symbolic and can be metaphoric and symbolic and saying, oh, I'm seeing this in the breath. It could represent this. If you don't want to breathe in, you might have hesitancy to moving forward or being alive. If you can't drop that exhale, it hasn't been safe to let go. And so bringing these things up with curiosity is really helpful.
Yeah, there's also this interesting piece around breath work where it's not something that we're making happen from our mind. Like maybe initially we're starting to do something intentionally, but at some point the mind just retreats and we become sort of the vessel for the breath to move through us.
Yeah, Leonard called that the breath breathing us. And that's such a beautiful moment in a rebirthing breathwork session where any effort you've been putting into keeping the mechanism going, it just takes off and the body goes into that automatic cleaning and you get to just step back and watch. And it's easier for some people. those of us who maybe have more of a freeze response where we try to figure everything out, and or people who have more intellect, are really good at problem solving, can tend to go up into the mind and try to figure out the sensations, figure out the emotions. But ultimately, the sensations and emotions get so strong that you have to let go of that. And people get to take a break from trying to figure it out and just really receive. And I like to say it's like the difference between moving through life and letting life move through you.
Yeah, and transpersonal counseling, we're exploring non-ordinary states of consciousness and this movement away from clinging to the ordinary mind and opening up to a different state of consciousness is just a beautiful practice for me, always. How easy it is to forget and start believing that if I effort and make something happen from my mind, that that is true. And just the practice of opening up and allowing the breath mechanism to work its magic, really.
I often will invite people just to really be in that like that childlike curiosity of the first time you saw something but you didn't know what it was. You're letting the information come to you, that show me kind of place. Because when our body communicates, it's sometimes someone will get a pain or a tension in the body and they'll go into it to try to figure it out. But that's with preconceived ideas or bias. And then when they can step back and say, I don't know what this is, show me, then it starts to unfold.
Yeah, I'm wondering if you share more about the memories that can arise in a person without like searching or trying to figure out just the insight that can arise. I know that I've had many experiences with past life memories and often going into yogic postures spontaneously in the midst of breath work. It just seems like things that are unexpected just start to reveal themselves.
Yeah, like I said, I've been doing this 35 years and I've seen the wildest stuff, the most far out stuff. Now, if somebody will have an experience, they'll ask me, is this normal? And the answer is always yes. There is no normal. Yes. When we look at somatic healing, and that the body can hold all the memories. And so sometimes when trauma happens, the conscious mind has to step aside. When the body goes into such a strong fight or flight when we're young to literally survive a life or death experience, the conscious mind sometimes disappears. And so, sometimes people have missing memories or years of their life they don't remember. They can still access those because the body will hold it. In my own experience, early in my breath work training, I went back to my birth memories. And I remembered in detail my birth. And at the time, my mother had seen me getting into this community, living in the forest, these hot springs. She was worried I was getting into a cult. And when I called my mom up and said, this is what happened at my birth, I even remembered my conception, what that was like for her. And it blew her mind. She was a believer because everything was correct. My awareness was there, even though it was nonverbal. And so, getting sometimes to those early birth memories, you really do need to be in an altered state because your mind was completely different. And one of the things breath work can do is it can create DMT in the pineal, the spirit molecule, which would help us get into altered states. So, sometimes that's people see colors, geometry, but more it's they go back to those memories. And sometimes those memories are so detailed. You can be in your childhood home and literally looking and seeing every little detail because the mind, the subconscious, the body stores it.
You had mentioned earlier that when Leonard first started offering rebirthing, it was in a hot tub, and it just evoked this memory of my childhood because we had a hot tub that my mom would rebirth people in. It was like way in the back property line at our house, and they would go out there with their little snorkel, and I'd be inside my house, sort of like peeking out, trying to see what might be happening out there. But I remember from my metaphysical eyes as a child, I could see the difference in a person who had arrived at our house before their session and how they looked when they left. And this was when I first realized that I could see subtle energy. I could see the like fluffy suppleness of their energy body and that softness that had occurred after experiencing breath work.
Yeah, Leonard was really good at reading that. You could walk up to him and he'd you need to go see him one time. He was like, you need to go stand with the horse. The horse will bliss you out. He could read your energy. He also, this is what I want to work with later, is some breath around avoiding burnout, because in that energy, there can also be an exchange. So as practitioners, we start expanding into these altered states and doing our own healing, we're opening up. And there is a little bit of being mindful around not taking on other people's suffering as a form of thinking we're helping them. And we'll look at that a little bit later. It's interesting to hear that, because that also, my early experiences was when Leonard Orr came through Spokane, where we were living. My dad divorced my mom and was living in a different house. And I went over to that house after Leonard had come through and done a training, and there's all these people in his house. And I immediately stubbed my toe and had a huge cathartic release because I walked into this field of energy that was saying, let it go. And when you get around that field that you were in and grew up in, you don't have a choice. You learn to let go.
So true. So true. That's amazing. Oh, yes. I have attention on time. I feel like I could ask you just infinite questions right now. But for somebody who's never experienced breath work or accessed non-ordinary states of consciousness, where is a good place to begin?
Well, I like to go early. So I, in my studies of breath work, I always try to find the earliest material. So that usually is yogic material. There's a book published in 1904 called Science of Breath by Yogi Ramacharaka. In this book, he talks about the physiology of the breath, but includes prana. At this time in 1904, it was believed that prana was life force energy in the ether. And ether was still on the periodic table at this time. So he mixes the science with prana, with the idea of life force energy in a really beautiful way, and then introduces breathing techniques. We'll work on some of those today. He also says in the beginning of the book, this is all going to be rediscovered and renamed. And so many of the exercises in this book have been. And so I'll be reading it and oh, this is now called three-part breath, or this is called box breathing. But this is a great place to start. And then another really good book is Thornton's Principles of Breath Work. This is also from a yogic perspective, but with science. This one's a little newer. They're a little similar. They have a little crossover, but it's interesting to see the different perspectives. I like to go early with, what was written, but also to start at basics, just like with yoga, that beginner mindset. So when I do my daily breathwork practices, I always start off with just the basic, finding the what would be called the yogic complete breath that we'll work with today. And then curiosity is huge. I have a 27-year-old son, and he isn't interested in rebirthing, but he did say to me the other day, we were camping, or it was actually last summer, he said, "Dad, I can't not pay attention to my breath." He's like, "Thanks a lot." So that curiosity of noticing your breath, noticing where your breath is, the quality of it, and then as practitioners, paying attention with your clients. When somebody walks into my office, I'm looking at, are they a nose breather or a mouth breather? And you can tell by face structure and just watching, where are they breathing? Are they in a threat response up here? Are they in their belly? Are their shoulders moving, hunched in? Or that if they take a deep breath, do they move their shoulders? Is their jaw moving? Like, there's all these details that if you bring curiosity to the breath, it speaks so much to us and through other people.
Thank you. And those details that you just named are details that clinicians can be paying attention to in our clients. And this is the sort of subtle movement of just noticing where they're holding, where they're bracing against, where the breath naturally moves with ease, and just really starting to listen that deeply to the breath of ourselves and our clients can just be so hugely impactful. You also offer group breathes on Zoom, which I'm a super fan of because you really make this work accessible for people all across the world. I'm just wondering if people want to find you there. What's your website?
RespirePDX.com.
RespirePDX, and I'll put that in the show notes too. So thank you.
One more thing about that, I know we want to move on, is with the mirror neurons, with co-regulating with our clients, it's also important to remember that if we take a deep breath, they're going to pick up on it. It's going to help them help their nervous system regulate. And with our kids, I know with my stepdaughter, if I sit with her and just take deep breaths, she starts to mirror it. So when we can hold that and practice it in ourselves, that can be really helpful.
Absolutely, absolutely. The way that I describe it to clinicians is that any moment you feel any contraction in your body, just be with yourself in a really loving way and allow your breath to start moving through you so you're not holding all of that in for your clients, that you're also emptying yourself out as you are sitting with clients, and it really does create more spaciousness in the container itself. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much. Join us in the Awaken Therapist online classroom, where my guest offers a master class in their area of expertise. This is intended for educational purposes only, and the content here should not be taken as advice or clinical supervision. Find out more at awakentherapist.com. The Awaken Therapist Level 1 certification is starting September 2025. In the 6-month training, you'll learn how to unlock the magic of psychotherapy. Join us in exploring deeper dimensions in your work with clients with less burnout. To learn more, check out our trainings at awakentherapist.com.